Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, you're locked in with the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, and Tom Lang. Tampa Bay Buccaneer Talk starts now. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron.
Welcome into the Scuttlebucks, my friends. Great to be back with you. Weekly podcast, first full length. Yeah. So, you know, listen, one more preseason game to go. Difficult to handle because it's the worst one. It's an unnecessary one. But I don't want to bring us down because that means the season is about to begin. I'm Jeff. That is Tom on the other side of the glass. Tom Lang, in fact. And I guess Washington and Tampa Bay will indeed play, right? And then we'll kind of largely ignore that, hold our breath that there are no injuries to keep backups. Starters aren't going to be out there. And we'll go from there. Let's first, though, react a little bit, ever so slightly, to the preseason game that we saw against Cleveland. Here's a problem. Let me just say this again. I thought, by and large, the first-teamers that were out there that weren't being held out for precautionary reasons played fine, played well. By and large, Jameis played well. One ill-advised throw, which I have a feeling we're going to be able to say every week of the season. I just think that's still who he is. As high as I am on his upside and what I think he is, which is I think he's a star, I do think he's at times the kind of guy that takes too many chances or unnecessary risks. I think that's self-evident. You can look at that games and know that. It doesn't outweigh by any stretch of the imagination all the good that comes with it. But I think we're going to be able to to predict, Tom, that after each week, win or loss, we're going to go, you know, he played quite well on Sunday. Save for that throw midway through the second quarter that left you scratching your head. There's just going to be those throws.
Yeah, it might not even be a pick. It's just
it's
a just decision.
Like, what in the hell are we doing here?
Let's reel it back in, man.
One of the weird things, can we do this real quick, Tom, while we're talking about the local media in Tampa that covers the Bucs? And there are some with, let's say, you know, Tampa Times that for whatever reason look to pick apart any throw that was nearly a disaster. You ever watch pro football across the league? Those other guys on the other side are paid too. They make plays, really, really amazing plays, plays that very few people in the population could ever dream of making. And sometimes it's not a bad throw. It's great play, defensive play. It's great read. It's something really that's unforeseen, save for the other guys are really good athletes. It happens. So we're not going to do that on the Scuttlebucks. There are dumbass throws and throws that he makes that are inexplicable and inexcusable, and we'll call those out for when we see them. And then there are plays that go wrong, that the receiver ran a wrong route, or my God, imagine this. A defensive back makes a play.
Yeah, I don't know what standard some media types in Tampa are holding Jameis Winston to. If it's the perfect standard, then there's got to be other baggage and reasoning as to why they're holding Jameis to that standard.
What are you trying to say, Tom?
I'm trying to say there might be an agenda in some places.
Occasionally.
Yes, I think there's baggage that comes along that clouds the vision because anybody with any vision at all who understands the game of pro football knows that entering year three, you've got yourself a quarterback.
Oh, well, that's not a question. It's not something we're ever going to really waste our time with. It's not a question. Is he perfect? No. Does he make mistakes? Absolutely. We'll call him out on them when they happen. It's part of it, but you move forward.
As it pertains to this week and what the offense did, you know, one of the few useful things that Rondae Barber said during the broadcast
was very rare to hear him say something insightful or anything that matters at all.
It was vanilla. Everything was vanilla. Apparently, on offense and defense, the coaching staff said, we're going to go very basic and let's see who stands out and who can make some plays. So, okay, preseason week three, typically you'd like to, see as much real type installation and football as you possibly can, but they did that in Jacksonville and they executed it at a high level, so whatever. But as you're watching the game and you're getting frustrated by the pressure that Cleveland's generating, play in and play out, remember two things.
One, Myles Garrett's going to be good.
What? Well, okay. How about three things?
Well, listen, Lee DeKemper's going to join us here in a moment. We'll talk about that there.
Three things. Myles Garrett's good. The second thing is that two of your starting offensive linemen weren't playing in this game.
That's
and
right.
Number three, it apparently Cleveland installed everything. Because if you look at the exotics and the extra pressures, I mean, they brought corner blitzes this past weekend.
Well, they wanted to show everything. I mean, they wanted to make sure they had everything in play. I actually think that's an interesting point. This isn't a Cleveland podcast. They're not terrible. Now, I don't know what Kaiser's going to look like when the regular season starts, but he got a cannon for an arm.
Yeah.
And there are pieces on that defense. They can play a little bit.
No, I mean, that run, they're going to be good across the board, that defensive line. They'll be able to stop the run. And apparently, Garrett, if he's looking like that, yeah, he'll be able to rush the passer and get home. They've always had an above-average defense the last five, 6 years. but they just have never had a quarterback. Kaiser at least has the throws. He's got the potential. He's got a big arm, and he can fit the ball in some crazy, incredible windows. But, yeah, again, they brought so many exotics against our vanilla approach on offense that I thought, especially without Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson too, that it's not a real representation of what the offense is going to look like. So if you're frustrated in that game, understand that Tampa Bay was installing nothing for Cleveland. They were playing vanilla offense, seeing what Godwin could be as a player, seeing what Howard could be.
And by the way, you're pointing to the thing that is valuable about preseason and avoiding the conversation around preseason that annoys me. Too many people of all fandoms watch preseason games and get like somehow emotionally invested in the result of a preseason game. You know, I've used the analogy before that pitchers in spring training are oftentimes working on a pitch to the detriment of the team that day. So if I need to work on my slider or my curveball, I'm going to work on it whether you're pounding me or not, because I need to get to a place where I'm comfortable with that entering the season, and the results don't effing matter. So yes, but to your point about this, preseason results don't matter, but Godwin's play mattered. You know, seeing whether or not he can make plays in real time, real speed.
Yeah, facets of the game. It's like watching a spring game in college. It's like, man, I'm not going to care about if everybody looks like they're together and the chemistry's good. I just want to know in certain situations, third and short, do we have an answer for that? Defensively speaking, third, you know, can we get to the passer? Those types of things. For example, okay, Brian Baldinger is an analyst for Fox Sports. At least he used to be. Maybe he's NFL Network these days. But he puts out a lot of film on Twitter.
I retweeted the throw to Cameron Brate.
It's a great follow. If you're not following and you want to learn about the game, then follow Baldinger because he just has all kinds of tight copy in all 22 mashups, and he teaches you something. So I reached out to him this week, and I asked him, hey, how quickly can you tell on film if a team's installed and if they're trying to play as though it's a regular season game when it's the preseason? He said it was tough to tell, but one thing he did notice this preseason, Green Bay is bringing a lot of pressures. They're practicing bringing a lot of pressures because they didn't, by and large, last year, and they're trying to improve on.
This is the kind of stuff you get at the Scuttlebucks, people. My man Tom Lang said, screw it, preseason schmeeseason, I'm calling up Brian Baldinger.
Exactly, and he said, so they don't want to get burned like they did by Atlanta. They got to learn how to bring pressures. So Green Bay has a goal in the preseason. I think Cleveland in the same way has a goal to try and put stuff on film and learn about themselves a little bit more and sequence their blitzes. Meanwhile, Tampa Bay's protections are vanilla. So it's just, again, it's not a true indicator.
I don't want to see any Buccaneer that's any good at all on the field in this next game. Like, I ought to see people in jeans.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I mean, I better not see anybody who's going to play a snap of a meaningful game ever on the field in this fourth preseason game. Janitors ever dreamed of suiting up in the Buccaneers uniform? Roll them out there.
So you're saying former Seminole sort of standout, Bobo Wilson should play every down.
Snap because he's not going to make the team anyhow. So roll him out there, let him look good in a uniform for a moment, and then cut his ass. That's what we're doing here. That's perfect. Hey, you know what I do want to know? I want to know about the health of this team by and large. So many guys did sit out. So let's talk to Lita Kemper, Joe Bucks fan. He will join us next on the Scuttlebucks. Yeah.
Avast ye Scuttlebucks.
All right, all right, all right. The Scuttlebucks. That's right. Good times covering Tampa Bay Buccaneers football. I'm Jeff Cameron alongside my good buddy Tom Wang. Hey. That music means we're going to be joined by the man himself, Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com, the website. Of course, you guys know that if you're listening to this. That's always a good thing. Hello, Lee. How the heck are you, buddy?
Jeff, fun times. 10 days away, roughly. Just a matter of days, and we're kicking off the regular season.
Yeah, you know, it kind of stunk that we were watching a preseason game with so many people absent, but it wasn't devoid of information. We were able to learn some things. For example, Myles Garrett's going to be really good.
I think so. It looks like he may have been worthy of that number one overall pick, huh?
Yeah, he's pretty quick. You know what? I actually, again, for as depleted of a roster as Tampa Bay rolled out there. I do think you kind of saw Jameis testing the waters there with some of his younger receivers, in particular Godwin, kind of get a feel for whether they're ready or not, you know. And save for some red zone issues again, I thought that by and large it was the one bad throw that Jameis played well. Would have liked to have seen them block it up a little bit better. But then again, as we just mentioned, Myles Garrett's pretty good. So your thoughts coming out of that that preseason game?
Yeah, I can't take a whole lot negative about it, only because they had 15 players out, 8 starters, 4 on both sides of the ball. Specifically on offense, we know DeSean Jackson was out, we know Mike Evans is out. But to your point about, you would like to see a little bit better blocking, well, they had 2 offensive linemen that were out.
Sure.
Jamar Dotson was out, obviously Panfield was out. So they were down 2 guys, and so I didn't expect a whole lot. Yeah, you would like to see things a little more crisper. That's supposed to be the dress rehearsal of the regular season. But, anytime a team is down 4 starters in a matter of days, that's going to affect your offense. I don't care if it's August. I don't care if it's November. That's going to hurt your offense. So I couldn't really take a whole lot out of it because of that.
Well, and I guess I want to get right to that. Tom and I were just talking about it. I mean, how healthy is this Buccaneer team? Where are we at?
Well, they're healthy. Gerald McCoy just the other day, he mentioned that, hey, I've been in regular season, I could go. Everything's fine, everything's good. Damar Dotson, they've been saying he's ready to go for a couple weeks as far as Miami. They're just playing it safe because it's a groin issue. I understand that. Panfield, that's the first I heard about Panfield being hurt. It was precautionary. Same with DeSean Jackson. Now, Mike Evans, they haven't said a whole lot about Mike Evans, which makes me wonder if there's some underlying factor there. But, you see him walking around after practice like there's no big deal, so it doesn't look like it's anything major with him. So I don't think it's anything to worry about. Cutter kept saying, oh, this is just minor stuff, this is just dings, we're okay. And from what we know with some of the players talking publicly, like Dotson, like Gerald McCoy, that everything is okay. Grimes, he had that nasty gash, had to have 20-something stitches. That's just a matter of, healing the scab, basically. And I've seen him working out after practice, and there again, I was told that he could go if it was a regular season game. Cutter knows it's a long season, and in recent history, the Bucs' record in December has been pretty terrible. So, maybe Cutter's overdoing it. We'll find out in a couple of months, but I think he sees the big picture here. Try to be healthy. Try to get these guys, rested if you can, as best you can, for December and for the stretch run.
Well, yeah, good. I don't need any more preseason action. I've seen enough.
Exactly.
Of what I don't need any more of it. Don't just at the. I mean, it was funny the other night. I'm sitting there. I go, we really don't need this third series. Go ahead and get him out. He looks good. Everybody, let's get everybody out of here. I err on the side of caution probably too much. I'm coming at it from the perspective of a fan in this situation, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. Look, when you could tell. In the preseason game that preceded this one, I should say, there's rhythm, there's timing, they're there, they're good to go. They've put in the preparation. I don't think we need to see too much more. We're getting awfully close to cuts. Your overview on that, some thoughts about where that's going to go?
Well, it's going to be interesting, obviously because of Hard Knocks, they've played up a couple guys, specifically is Riley Bulla.
Sure.
Depending on your persuasion, you either call him Joe Dirt, you call him Fabio, or you call him Bully. He's got all kinds of nicknames. That's interesting. But that's what Hard Knocks does. They find a guy, they build up the drama. And Tuesday night, Hard Knocks did a perfect thing. They built up the drama early in the show. Riley Bulla. Then at the end of the show, he was making mistakes on pass defense, and they're setting it up for next week for the cut. So I don't think there's going to be any major surprises. Bulla obviously is interesting. The number 5 wide receiver is interesting. Tuesday Hard Knocks in your neck of the woods. Bobo Wilson, not a good look, sir. Not a good look.
Well, he's not any good anyhow. He's not a good player. He was never going to make the team. Get the hell out of
here.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's not any
when
good.
A rookie free agent's mouthing off at assistant coaches,
no.
That's not good.
I would have cut him on the spot. Cut him on the spot. What are we doing here? He's not good enough to do that.
Yeah, to reinforce that point, he's doing this on HBO, where all the NFL world can see it. You think anybody's going to pick this guy up now with the attitude he's got? I mean, come on.
Yeah, so, I hate to be cruel, but we saw enough here. I'm not attacking him personally. He's mm-hmm. just not any good. He's not an NFL player. I don't know why. Let's just be honest. He was never going to make this team. He certainly just guaranteed that.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, the 5th receiver is going to be very interesting. Obviously, I don't think it's going to be Bobo Wilson. fifth wide receiver is going to be interesting now, and I get caught in this trap as well. You're looking for guys to make decent catches, be a good receiver on the field in preseason and in practices. But both Cutter and Jason Light have stressed that number five wide receiver guy, he's got to play special teams. He's got to play special teams. So, it's almost to the point where your number five wide receiver isn't going to make the team because of his receiving ability. He's going to make it because of his special teams ability, whether that be a return, whether that be a gunner, what have you. He's got to be a special teams guy. And the same with running back. Running back's very interesting to me because, honestly, I think running back is the weakest position on this team.
Without question. I hate it. I hate our backs.
Shown. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's shown in the preseason. You know, I am in a very much still a buyer beware mode on Doug Martin. I like Doug Martin as a person. I hope he turns things around. But I got to be objective here. And he, two out of 3 years, he's been good. Two out of 5 years, he's been good. 3 out of 5 years, he's been terrible. Now he's on a suspension. And this is a team that can't monkey around. They play in too tough a division. You can't, hope that he comes back. And by the way, I love Bobby Knight's quote. Hope is a four-letter word. You can't hope this guy comes in October and he's going to be ready to ball out. All of a sudden, snap your fingers, this guy's going to run for 120 yards a game. You can't hope for that. And what's going to be very interesting to me is see how Jason Light plays all these guys that are going to be getting cut. I mean, it's a very... Yeah, there's going to be some good guys getting cut. Maybe Matt Forte. And I've been hearing Matt Forte. I know he's old. He's up there. But the reason why they drafted Charles Sims, because Lovey had in his head, he's the next Matt Forte. I'll take Matt Forte at 30 years old than Charles Sims at 24. I'm sorry. And, if you're looking for a one-year deal. So that's going to be very interesting. I'm very keyed in on the running backs. How Jason Light plays that. If he's going to go fishing for guys who get cut from another team, if he's going to stick with his guys, what's the deal with Doug Martin? Jacquizz Rodgers, the whole running back situation to me is a soap opera in and of itself. So I'm going to be keyed on that.
Luckily, running backs, just about, at least in terms of rentals, are a dime a dozen. You can find enough guys if you're productive up front. If you block it up, you can get production from average running backs. Again, it's all relative. If you're in the NFL, mm-hmm. you're the elite of the elite. But amongst that group, you can find a lot of middling guys to get the job done on a given Sunday. And you don't have to be married to them long term. In fact, I'm rarely of the mindset that you should ever be married long term to a running back, period. First of all, I think you can hope that Doug Martin comes back and hits the ground running. Hope is what you can do. You can't assume he will. Now, here's what I'll say. My prediction is he does hit the ground running. He looks good right now, and he'll be fresh, and he'll play well. But the Bucs don't need to tie themselves to him long-term anyhow. What you said is accurate. I think he's got one more real good season of football in him with a high volume of carries, and that's it. He's not a big dude. But I think he's got one more good year, and hopefully it's this one. It's the 13 games that he's going to play in, and you hope from there that you get the production. You got to get by these first three games. I agree with you. Behind him, the Bucs really don't have anything. There are guys
it's
that are
a bunch of part-time guys, I won't use the word hacks, but a bunch of wannabes and a bunch of has-beens.
Well,
let's be honest. Jacquizz Rodgers was cut by the Bears, and he was on the sidewalk looking for work, and Cutter saved him. he was on the street for a reason. Here's the thing about Doug Martin, to reinforce your point. I was told by the NFL general manager once, the closer a running back gets to 30, the statistics of him falling off the table are damning. And Doug Martin will be 29 after the Super Bowl. He'll be 29 in early 2018. So to your point, he's got maybe one good year in him. I tend to agree with you because of the damning stats of running backs the closer they get to 30.
Well, and also his history. When he's had a high volume of carries in a given year, he's come back and had a terrible year. He hasn't really or been hurt or whatever. He hasn't been able to produce consistently in back-to-back seasons. We've never seen it. There's no reason to believe that's going to happen. So, hopefully after he's holding up the Lombardi, you can say a fond farewell.
Yeah, we can dream. That would be a fond farewell.
Hey,
Jerome Bettis.
Hey, before you go, I do want to ask you about this. It's an annual gripe, Lee, I understand. But where do we stand on the defensive end rotation, and what do you foresee the production level to be in season? I know this is a pet peeve of yours, so fire away.
Yeah, when you said defensive end, I just did a face palm. Oh, here we go. 10 years running. It's a pet peeve of mine. It's a pet peeve of yours. The Bucs are hoping Noah Spence kind of has a breakout, and he's had a rather quiet camp. Now, I love this guy's heart. And I've written about this many times, about how he has separated shoulder last year. And he separated in the last game of the season against Carolina. And he had that sucker popped back in on the field. And he went out there and he was playing one-handed, basically. And he was tackling Cam Newton, who's a huge dude, with one hand. That's warrior. But you know what? I love the warrior mentality, the heart, the passion. All the intangibles are there. Now I just need to see production. Production is the key. And I keep telling people that. Well, so-and-so, I like so-and-so. Well, I like him too. But do you like him enough that you could bank on him to get X amount of staff? You need production. That's why the Bucs haven't been in the playoffs. No production. You know, I think they're grasping at straws. If they're, you know, first off, Noah, I love him. I'm starting to become, I'm not convinced there yet, but I'm starting to think he's more of an outside linebacker than he is a defensive end. He's kind of overmatched as a defensive end. He's not that huge of a guy. He's quick. He's got moves. But when he goes up against guys the size of Donovan Smith, for example, he's overwhelmed. I saw Donovan Smith almost pancake the guy in practice. Jackie Smith, you talk to the Bucs people, they always talk about Jackie Smith. You can't bank on Jackie Smith.
No,
the only thing you can bank on him about is getting hurt. And I hate to say that, but that's the honest truth. That's the hard facts. That guy is always hurt. And some people are like that and some people aren't. That's nothing personal against him. It's just an ugly fact. So I think, once again, we're going to be holding our breath every game, praying somehow, some way, a defensive end gets pressure on a quarterback. And to me, that's the key for the defense. If you ask me to pick one key for the defense to succeed, pressure on the quarterback. And where does that come from? Defensive end. You know, you can't, McCoy, as good of a player as he is, defensive tackles generally don't get 12 sacks a year. That just doesn't happen. Maybe Aaron Donald once in a blue moon. That's about it. So that is the key, and that's been the key since Simeon Rice left this team. And as a franchise as a whole, over 3 general managers' administrations, over 5 coaches, that's a mortal sin that this franchise has not been able to solve the problem at defensive end.
I love that I got to ask that question to you. I knew where it was going to go. I could have probably paraphrased your answer. I knew what was good, but I asked it anyhow because that kind of passion is always good to hear, and it makes me smile because you're not wrong. And oh, by the way, for all of our listeners, just in general, you know, I have a mantra of mine is the NFL is certainly a league of mercenaries. You need not worry about people's feelings. This is not a matter of, hey, Jerry's a real nice guy. That's great. I don't give a damn if Jerry's a nice guy. If he sucks, he sucks. Just say it. It's all right, buddy. You don't have to qualify it because they're going to
–
they cut everybody the second they get hurt. It's not like they go, well, he sure is a nice guy, great family. They don't care. They also signed people fresh off of throwing a woman on a stack of guns. So don't worry about it, man. This is a league of mercenaries.
I was talking to Gary Shelton, longtime columnist in the Tampa Bay area. He was with the Times forever. And I was talking to him about this very subject yesterday. And I said, you know, my 2 pet peeves are, he's a nice guy. Well, I'm sure your neighbor's a nice guy. You sure as hell wouldn't sign him to play on your NFL team, number one. Number two, my pet peeve, oh, he works hard. Well, so do plumbers. That doesn't mean he can go out there and sack the quarterback.
I like that you use plumbers. Be well, sir. We'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
All right, bye. Lita Kemper right here on JoeBucksFan.com. Scuttlebucks is what you're listening to. Let's react to that in a moment here, Tom. That was
That's the best he's done at keeping contained and finishing the rant. Usually he runs out of breath, so I'm really impressed with Lee's effort there.
But he did not throw out, take a dump on the field. He usually finds a way to throw work that one.
Wait, next week we're going to set the over-under prop on how many times that appears on JoeBucksFan.com this season.
It's the Scuttlebox. Keep listening.
Sieging the Bay, one topic at a time. The Scuttlebucks return now on JoeBucksFan.com.
Our thanks to Lita Kemper, as always. Welcome back, Scuttlebots. I'm Jeff Cameron. That is Tom Lang. Hey, let's delve into this right away, Tom. You and I think, are in agreement, oddly, for once, about running backs. We usually aren't. That's like one area where we tend to disagree. I mean, like, you sort of have a thing, I think, for Charles Sims, who sucks. and I don't. But we both agree Doug Martin is going to have a good year when he comes back from his PED suspension.
Yeah, I mean, I think Charles Sims is a decent third down back because he can protect if you need him to, and then obviously he's got good hands, and that's what they drafted him to do. Too high, they drafted him. I totally agree. But yeah, Martin this year, listen, there's one thing that Doug Martin does well when he's going right, and that's erase mistakes in the backfield. You know, if you have a penetrating rusher or a linebacker that's unblocked, he can make that guy miss.
That's correct. Yes.
A loss of two or three into a gain of two or three. And when you have as many weapons as we have in the passing game this season, man, that makes all the difference in the world. Because if you can keep a team off balance, down a distance leverage with second and six or third and four, where they can't rightfully stack against a run or pin their ears back and come against the passer, man, I think he's got that in spades, and I also think he's got game-breaker ability. He'll never run away from you and score an 80-yard touchdown with any consistency. He's got decent top-end speed, but he's not a breakaway home run hitter. I think he's a winning piece to the puzzle this year because he looks fresh and he looks refreshed mentally, and you could see that on Hard Knocks.
In an odd way, missing the first three games benefits him greatly so that he's still fresh and playing well at the end of the year. I mean, you'd like to have him at the start of the season. But to my point that I was making to Lee, and people might think, well, I like Doug Martin. Listen, Doug Martin has had two 1,400-plus yard seasons, and that's why a lot of people in Tampa love him, especially since one of those was 2012. Right off the bat, you see a guy come in, he plays in 16 games, he carries the ball over 300 times, he goes for over 1,400 yards, he scores 11 touchdowns, and people go, well, my God, we nailed it. We got it. Well, but remember, running backs, that 300-plus carry mark is a big deal for all running backs, especially guys who aren't all that big. The following year, he comes back. He only plays in six games. In the six games he played in, he averaged just over 3 yards a carry. Wasn't very good. Then he comes back, and he only plays in 11 games. So right off the 1,400-yard season, he has back-to-back years where he doesn't even reach 500 yards rushing, and he barely plays a full season combined for 2 years. So you don't know that you can trust him. Well, right when you're about to wash your hands, he comes right back and has a huge year, 1,400 yards in 2015, and they really, really relied on him. Not quite 300 carries, but 290, whatever it might have been. So there he was, 1,400-plus yards again. So you see him at a high end. He's good. He's a good running back, even very good at times. Not great. He's never great. But he's my fumble is
sure. Yeah.
Okay, so he's never great, but he is sometimes very good. But then last year, the eight games, 2.9 yards per carry, garbage. So whatever happens this year is his last year. It should be his last year with Tampa Bay.
I tend to agree, yeah. And again, it is kind of funny we're agreeing wholeheartedly on the running back position. But to me, again, I think there was more than meets the eye than just about wear and tear. Wear and tear is going to be a concern with Doug Martin. That's why I agree he should be done after this year in Tampa, no matter what happens. But there also was a commitment issue, clearly. I mean, the suspension happened for a reason. And if you listen to whispers down in Tampa, commitment to football wasn't always there. That's why, I get it, Hard Knocks is an opportunity for Doug to play up the PR angle of a reformed man.
Right.
I hear you, so I'm not fooled by that. You know, my radar is up.
But this sounds like the Lee point. I mean, we don't dislike Doug Martin. I mean, fine, whatever. You know, he seems like a nice enough guy.
But what I'm saying is I bought it. You know, I bought that there is this greater sense of commitment to the game because he knows it's about to be over.
Well, I was about to say, that's rededication out of necessity. That's
correct.
I'm about to be out the damn league.
Man, I don't award people points for what they should do. Right. But if they're doing what they should do and Doug Martin has the ability that he has at the upper level of the National Football League when he's a good running back, then hell yeah, bring him on. I would have said March, cut his ass. Screw it. Why even bringing him back for camp? He's splitting reps, and he's going
to
be what?
Well, but you have a chance to void the huge deal is why you could bring him back. He doesn't have options.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You bring him back at like a third of the cost and say, all right.
I just thought from a commitment to the team standpoint, send the message that if you're not committed to us, we're not committed to you. Let's cut you loose. Plus, you're a three-yard a play back. But looking at what he's done this preseason, I've completely changed my mind. You need that guy. He's an asset moving forward this season. Get through these three games with whoever you have to patchwork it with.
Well, and here, you know, Lee said you can't hope for that. You can absolutely hope for that. But I actually think that there's some certainty there. He's going to come back and play well.
He looks refreshed,
yeah,
man.
He looks good. Yes, he looks really good. When he's in the game, he plays well. He's fine. I think he'll come back and play really well. He'll obviously keep himself together for the three games that he's out, but I think he'll play exceptionally well. Can the Bucs go 2-1 in their first three games with really an average to subpar, substandard, frankly, backfield? I think so.
But I think there's also an important point in complementary football on the offensive side. You have many more weapons this year. You can't stack against the run. You know, that's the other thing. In some of those Martin years, yes, he's hurt. Yes, there might have been a commitment issue. But also, I mean, what are you doing if you're a defense? You're keying on Mike Evans last year, and you're stacking against the run. Good luck, Jameis. Good luck finding open receivers on the perimeter. Freddie Martino, good luck consistently finding that guy open down the football field. We're going to stack up, and we're going to stop your run game. Now you can't do that. That's the benefit. It's not just about Winston and weapons. It's about, from a defensive standpoint, what do I try and stop?
The Bucs have more weapons than we probably thought would happen at this juncture of Jameis' career. They moved on the idea early. All right, we draft this guy to be a franchise quarterback. In year one, he shows us he has the tools to be a franchise quarterback. And when you have one, you have to feed it. You got to go all in. You got to give them weapons. And so I applaud Jason Light and Tampa Bay for doing just that. They have gone out. They've gotten weapons. Should be a more balanced attack for Tampa Bay, to your point. I think Jameis is going to have a great year. I also think, and I've been thinking about this a little bit, I'm pretty locked in terms of Jameis and his personality, and we've watched him from day one when he was here at Florida State. And I think he's going to have a big year. I agree with the pundits out there who are talking about Jameis having a huge impact. He already has. This stuff drives me nuts. He set records at his age. He's thrown for over 8,000 yards in 2 years. He's thrown 50 touchdowns in 2 years with one freaking guy to throw to. So he's already had a huge impact. I get what they're trying to say, that this will be a better year than the first two and one that thrusts him into the national conversation of top 10 quarterback. Okay, well, that seems easily predicted, and it's right to do so. That's who he is. That's what he'll be. As far as the other side of the equation, or the coin, if you will, he throws too many interceptions. All great quarterbacks that challenge defenses down the field and trust their arms and trust in other players, and he does that to a fault, I think, throw too many interceptions. It's, again, you'd rather say whoa than giddy up to a quarterback. Long term, that's a good thing. He's going to throw a lot of interceptions again. And I don't mean a lot as in like 25, but I don't know Jameis is at the place yet where we can trust that to go along with the yardage and the touchdowns, you're going to get sub-double-digit interceptions. I don't think that's who he is. I think he's going to throw 10 to 15 picks, probably more like 15 picks.
Yeah, to the point where we get pissed off on a few occasions this season.
Yeah, because that's still in him. He is just 23. You know, one of the weirdest things, so I make certain assumptions about him, which a lot of people are still weighing, and that is that he's great. I'm already there. I'm there. There's still a lot of people trying to decide that for themselves. Well, I mean, it's taking you too long. It's obvious to me. So he's great. But what I look for are these little moments of a personality shift and the thought cognitively, like, are you able to check out for half a second, a millisecond, in the moment where the competitive side overrides logic? Can you find yourself in that moment and realize this is dumb? So in the game against Cleveland, he takes a sack on a play where he really looked like he wanted to throw to an area where he probably in his mind certainly knew a player was supposed to be. But that's the kind of thing that gets him in trouble because he can't get anything on it. Usually somebody's wrapped around his leg. He took that sack. It seems like a benign sort of thing. I actually stood up and celebrated. Thank you. Thank you for taking the sack, Jameis. It's okay. In this league, it's okay to punt, and it's okay to give up on a play when it's not there. And the more he does that, obviously, the faster he ascends to the elite level of quarterback. I like that he took that sack because he showed an inclination to throw and then didn't do it.
Yeah, it's akin to what Dirk Cutter was talking about on the sidelines in Jacksonville. We have points. You know,
yeah, we got sure points. Don't F this up.
Take the points. Whenever you can get the points, take the points. And that's from a don't turn it over standpoint. Don't take a risk standpoint. You know, sometimes if you have a fourth and one and it's a big situation, Tony Dungy would always kick it. You know, don't take the points. You might want to go get that yard and let's go get a touchdown here. But from a, you know, are we going to score 6 points or zero? No, three's an option.
Three is a viable option. You don't have to score a touchdown here.
Yeah, for me too, this season, I just want to see when he has all the weapons and he has the ability to run check. I think his run checks are going to be much better this year. This is something he did very, very well in Tallahassee because he was loaded.
I thought he did it really well his rookie year, and it's one of the reasons Doug Martin had such a, I mean.
I agree, but it should only be strengthened this season because, again, defenses have to respect across the board all the weapons that Tampa has.
Sure, so if he sees, absolutely.
If he recognizes there's a double on Evans pre-snap and they're shading somebody over to look at DeSean Jackson, well, the slot's going to be open and he can run check. Those types of things should improve the overall efficiency of the offense. But you're right. At the same time, there are going to be moments. Push comes to shove. Is it I can make the play or is it it's not our time here? This is not our play. You know what? Let's check it down. Let's get rid of it. Let's take the sack. Because the team is the important thing here. You can't be bigger than the team. Even though Jameis is the quintessential leader, as Jason Light talked about last night on Hard Knocks, even though he is the quintessential leader,
yeah,
he is selfish at times when he makes those decisions. Make no mistake, those are selfish choices.
Yeah, but those are born out of a youthful exuberance to make a play. It's not sort of a me selfishness you're talking about.
No.
The act itself is selfish because it betrays the opportunity for others. But I still say it's born out of the right reasons.
It's
a desire to make plays.
It's not a wide receiver's diva,
right,
give me the damn ball selfish.
Nonsense.
It's a different kind of selfish.
Speaking of which, really quick, I know we're going to take a break here, but yes, sir, check on Chris Godwin. Good draft choice, going to work out. Sorry. It's not going to work out for Jeremy McNichols. I think we know that now. So if you're just looking at the draft, listen, he's a fifth-round guy, McNichols is. I get it. They don't always work out. I tend to hold out hope that fifth-round running backs are going to make the team for you, at least contribute a little bit. It's not going to happen.
Well, he's just thinking.
Yeah,
he's thinking.
It's too fast for him, and he's lost in the playbook.
And again, it was clear last night on Hard Knocks, they're talking about, you know, only at one speed. He's only at one speed. Where's the explosiveness? That's because you're thinking your way through things.
Can't play like that, man. Got to play.
I think he's got the ability to play and catch on at some point, but it's just you've got to get the thought process out of your way. You got to play instinctively.
Well, it's not happening now, so he'll be off this team. You're listening to the Scuttlebucks. Yes, sir.
The cannons. Plant the daggers.
There's the dagger! There's the dagger!
The Scuttlebucks are back on JoeBucksFan.com. Here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
Scuttlebucks! What's up? Jeff Cameron, Tom Lang. Nicely done with the Chili Peppers. If you would, you know what? We got to introduce certain sort of features of Scuttlebucks for each week that we'll be doing. This would be one of them. Cue it up, sir.
And now, merriment and misery.
All right. So let's start with merriment. Still my favorite ride. I'm still thinking about the song. As a little kid. You hit that air condition, man.
Well, yeah, that's
you hit
was,
that
yeah.
air condition, get in that boat.
Mm. The cannon fire is a little different in Ray J than it was at the ride in Disney.
Right,
psst,
right.
Psst, psst, psst.
I loved it.
Yeah,
loved it. I still do when I take my kids, which is seldom because I hate Disney World. All right, so here we go. This is this is merriment and misery, and we've got sound for merriment. This would be Jameis Winston. You guys all saw this. If you didn't, listen up.
Hey, patience is the easiest way, all right? Take my word, because I'm a risk taker. All right, have patience. You got Coach Jackson.
Coach Jackson.
So listen to him, let him guide you, but patience is the easiest way. Taking that ball down, even though you got that cannon, listen to me, because they ain't going to tell you that. Because you got that. You spoiled, all right? You blessed, all right? Do your thing.
Hey, good luck with everything.
Yeah.
All right, so two things with that, but before we get there, I don't hate Disney World. I hate the people. So here you go. Here's what I'll tell you.
It's all the freaking strollers.
It's fat people
and, the fat
and strollers.
People and the scooters.
That's, yes. And then it's hot. Yes. So that's a deadly combination.
They get to go in the handicap line. It's
like, and I'm like, you're not handicapped. You're just fat. Stop eating. All right. So here you go. What I like about that, this is why it's merriment. All right. For those who've covered him or played with him, certainly people I've spoken to that have played alongside him, both with baseball and football. If you go back to his hometown, as they did on Hard Knocks. You talk to any coach he ever played for or anybody ever had as a teammate. Literally, if you do that, you'll know they all love him almost unconditionally. And I think you get a glimpse as to why. He's the ultimate teammate. That's why his leadership works, because it's genuine. He cares about ball players. He cares about ballers. He'll talk to the last guy on the bench who's never going to play it down. He'll talk to anybody within the realm of the sport, whether that's a bullpen catcher in baseball or a water guy in football who's sacrificing just like everybody else to be around the game. He loves that, because here's why I say that. Yes, he's talking to Kaiser. And yes, that's a fellow quarterback, and he's got a love for quarterbacks. It's a fraternity. We got you. But that, he doesn't get anything by doing that. Like, why him helping Kaiser and giving that advice doesn't benefit Jameis Winston at all in any way. There's nothing. In fact, you could make an argument long term, it could hurt him. So the fact that he does it, that's genuine. That's, people flock to that, and that's cool, and I'm glad we got another glimpse of it. But the other reason I like it, and Tommy, you and I have talked about this before, what else does it do? Clearly, he's hearing the message.
Yeah, to me, you know, HBO Hard Knocks can tape a lot of situations, and some of them feel more canned than others. For example, Dirk Koetter in week one is sitting across his desk from Jameis Winston, and they're talking about the big questions about being a quarterback. Do I think that was all fake? No. And scripted? No. But they know very well what's going on.
Well, they know the cameras are on him, yeah.
Correct. When Jameis is on the field talking to a fellow quarterback after the game is over, that to me is more in the wild, if you take to my meaning, which is, you know, it's more candid. It's,
well, it's an authentic situation.
I forgot there's a microphone in my chest plate, and I forgot that there are cameras on the field. I'm just talking to a fellow quarterback who, you know, by the way, he only completed 6 passes, but a couple of the passes that Kaiser completed show that he has in his arsenal
the tools.
NFL throws. I mean, elite NFL throws.
Well, he's got better NFL throws than a lot of starting NFL quarterbacks. If you're just talking about pure arm strength, whew, that wowed me. Yes, the throw up the sideline on the move against his body was insane.
A popular phrase that we use on the Cameron Show up here in Tallahassee is game recognizes game, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a cliche anyway. But that's what Jameis was doing. Game recognized game there. And he said, you know what? I wish somebody told me this when I was a rookie 2 or 3 years ago and I was learning the lessons of the NFL. So he was trying to pass on the knowledge. What's he learned? And that's the key term, learned. It is something that Jameis has assimilated. We've seen Dirk scream it at Jameis.
Clearly, the message has sunk in. Now, whether he does it or not is what we're all watching closely to see. But at least we know he's hearing. He's hearing and digesting what he's being told to do.
Right. Your two sons have heard clean your room before.
Right.
And they repeat it. I've got to clean my room. Yes, Dad, I'm going to clean my room.
Yeah.
But do they clean the room all the time?
No, they don't. Right. I need you to clean the room.
So that's the next part.
Yeah.
But at least Jameis has heard it enough that he's imparting it to a rookie quarterback.
It's the Seinfeld taking of reservations. You got to hold the reservation, my man. Anybody can take a reservation. I need you to check down, Jameis. I'm glad that you give that advice to other people, but there's a time and a place. But here's the thing. It's such a fine line, because I said this during the last Scuttlebucks, which is you don't want a guy who makes plays because he's aggressive to tone that down to a place where he's a middling check down Charlie.
I don't think it'll ever happen, but
yes, I don't think it's in his nature.
But that's the fear of the Dirk Koetter interaction from episode 1 of Hard Knocks is don't neuter this kid. No. That's special. What he has, the chances he takes.
And he's gonna throw some picks because of it. But you know what? So do all the good ones.
That's special. Because that's a person who can go win you a game on the road in the playoffs at some point in his career.
That's
because
right.
He's not afraid.
So anyhow, we're going to do merriment and misery every week. Not hard to see how that fits into the theme of the program. Enjoy doing this. We're just getting started. This is only episode 2. Really, the first full episode. This misery part of this will take 10 seconds. The last preseason game. Who gives a damn? It's garbage. The worst. First of all, it shouldn't exist.
Yeah, it's the worst week in NFL football.
It's just awful. So we got to get through this, guys. Next week we will, and it will be fun because we'll be looking ahead to the start of the season.
The adrenaline. Okay,
woo!
We feel the adrenaline up here because college football big time is coming back this weekend. But I'm
pro football too, baby.
I want my Sunday adrenaline back.
It's back. It's
we're going to feel it when the music hits next week.
Basically back. Crank it. For Tom Lang, I'm Jeff Cameron. Thanks for listening to the Scuttlebucks.